completely not ready to give a talk on becoming. I have done so many things in the last 2 weeks that the mind is not allowing me to put anything new in it. So what I proposed was that we spend the night talking about some questions and answers about how you're faring with this dependent origination. For me, dependent origination is so core to being able to awaken that if we leave it too complicated and too analytical or academic, it doesn't really grow in us in an understanding that can help us. And so I thought maybe we can talk a little bit about that. I really want to end by 8:30 because I'm afraid I might fall out of my chair and go to sleep on you. And I just don't want that to happen. So instead, I figure we'll spend the next half hour or so taking some questions that you have. And next week, when instead of having a discussion night, we'll actually have a talk on becoming. How does that sound? Okay. You're such good people. I feel so held. I'm so happy. Of course, it might be difficult to get someone to start talking. Oh, Brooke, look at you. Right there. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to thank you, actually, for, I think it's so important to model not only self-care, but asking people to support us. So I just wanted to thank you for modeling that for us tonight. I need to see that in the world. So thank you.
You are so welcome.
And I do have a logistic question. I see that we can't use chat anymore. And so if we have, like, I've had some technical issues or questions that I wanted to ask, but I couldn't because we don't have chat. Is this how you want us to communicate now, is just raise our hand?
I don't know. Yeah, it would be a Ken question or a Cheryl question.
It seems chat available.
Yeah. I think that I thought that we had chat turned on just to hosts and co-hosts. I'm not sure. I haven't really been.
My thing. Let's see.
I just put on my chat and it looks like it's there.
Okay. Maybe it just wasn't in the beginning.
Now it is.
Okay. Good. Okay. All right. Great.
All right.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
There. So you can send your question in through the chat, but I need you to let me know. Somehow I have to watch it, or you can, I just want someone to share how we've been practicing with this for an entire, you know, like 10 months. And how available is this dependent origination for you? Beth?
Hey there. So the trio I shared with last week will might be a little bored because I'm going to repeat myself, but I've been dedicating the last couple of months since listening to your talks between the craving and the clinging to my role as a parent of someone with, my son has autism and epilepsy. So there's a lot of clinging. There's a lot of clinging, and it's the challenge I feel is that it's, you know, it's biologic, this urge to caretake. And so I've been wrestling with, like, where is this biology and the impulse, and letting that be okay to have that impulse, yet try to monitor when it gets on the craving train, the clinging train. The craving's fine, but the clinging train.
Yeah.
and trying to catch it. And this, you know, this child's 26 years old. It's time to let things, yeah, certain things happen. But that biology is just very, I feel it. I just feel the pathways from the birth of this person.
Yeah.
That don't stop.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That's actually quite beautiful. That's exactly what I'm talking about. What you described is exactly why I think dependent origination is so important. Because it is impulsive. It is hardwired in us. And so our practice can't be some future thought about I'm not going to crave anymore. It has to be, how do I learn the line when I've crossed it? Where is that line? How do I know what it is? Maybe the line is one way when he was 10, but the line is different. Sort of like when my son, you know, asked me, you know, that picture of me when I had that blue shirt on, you remember that picture? I'm like, yeah, that's my baby. He goes, I'm not that guy. I'm not that kid anymore. And that was a shocking thing for me not to see him that way, even though he knows and I know that's the way I see him, is the little baby with the blue shirt on. But he's not. And so what craving, clinging looks like to a 10-year-old, for a 10-year-old, is different than what it looks like for a 26-year-old. And what you're describing is exactly what our practice should be about. Trying to find for yourself where the line is when you move outside of. So we want to stay into the craving so we can feel the discomfort of it and settle in that discomfort. You know, kind of let go of the distortion. That's how you can tell there's a distortion there. So how is it that I can find that quality to stay in that discomfort and find a measure of ease there rather than floating over into clinging? And I think that's what Buddha was pointing to in that original sutta I read at the very beginning. That's what he was pointing to. We're so passionate and so caught up in it, he thought it would be too difficult. But then you say something like what you just said, like, I'm looking for that line. It's so hardwired. I'm just looking for the line when I'm crossing over. That's all we can do as practitioners.
Well, and there's been some brutal honesty arisen that's a little humbling and embarrassing to admit, I guess, but I think it's also natural, is that one of the things I realized is that sometimes I'm not, you know, there's the good mom script is, it's like, I want him to be happy. I want him to be okay. And sometimes I've admitted to myself, I'm not as interested in him being okay as in me getting relief.
Yes, that's it. That's it right there.
It's embarrassing as a mom to admit that, but it's like that sort of the Pema Chodron, you know, just give me a break. I just want a little relief. I just want to relax.
Yes.
Just close the door and the windows, man. Sometimes just.
Yeah, that's it. But can you hear the wisdom in what you're saying? The wisdom isn't that the relief isn't coming. You know, somebody went to the Buddha one time and asked him, can you bless us so that we have a good life? You know, and so the Buddha thought for a moment and then he goes, your father dies, you die, your son dies. And the guy's like, what? That's not a blessing. I need a blessing. You know, we think of blessing something rosy, like may you have a long life. And Buddha said, can you see something to the effect? I'm paraphrasing now, but something about, can you see that if you died before your father, the pain that would cause your father? Or if your son died before you guys, the pain that would be caused. So the healthiest, you're all going to die. The best, most sane way is your father dies, you die, and then your son dies. And so when you think about it like that, you're not going to get rid of the pain and anguish of being a parent. But if you can begin to feel the tug of craving, you can know you're going down that road towards more suffering, and you can see if you can touch into where the delusion is and let it go, which sounds like that is exactly what you're doing. You will not get rid of the tug, though. That is inherent with being a parent. It's inherent with being, with having children. It's just, there's no way out of it.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Well, maybe I'll talk a little bit since we're all waiting and quiet. I'll tell you why I think dependent origination is so important. It's because of the nature of habit. I think that when I realized that what it means when a teacher says that this is habit, it's not you. This is habit, it's not you. This is habit, not you. We say that all the time, it's habit, not you. What that actually means is it's dependent origination. It is this flow that has begun at some point in our lives, and that flow is what we are caught in. So if we attach that to us, then we get the mistaken belief that we can somehow fix this. We can somehow make it better. We can somehow end the suffering. And when something is a co-arising out of dependent origination, we cannot interrupt it. I mean, I know we can interrupt it. We cannot make it not happen. It happens as part of the natural flow, but it's sort of like what Beth and I were talking about. We can interrupt that flow and create space for us to disentangle ourselves. But suffering is the nature of this realm. So it can't be about, I'm not going to suffer anymore. It's got to be more about having choice for how long we go into the habit energy of a particular thing. And I'm hoping you see that over the course of the 5 months. I mean, the 10 months, you begin to see how much of our movement is habit and very little is us. I think this is coupled with non-self. Not no self. There's a self there, but it doesn't have any value because it's all based in this a co-arising, cyclical, dependent origination kind of way that we move through the world. Like an engine has started and, you know, the car is just rolling down the hill. And it's rolling down the hill on its own. So that's sort of the way you can see all you can do is then interrupt that flow. Keep interrupting, keep interrupting, keep interrupting.
Tweri?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking about dependent origination, and then I'm thinking about cessation and abandoning. Yeah. And I'm thinking about mindfulness, and you know, I'm meditating, and suddenly I realize that I have been, you know, lost in thought. So I didn't wake up that I was lost in thought, right? It's just something, I don't know what it is.
It's
so is
your
that
previous
what you're talking
practice.
About? You
yes.
know, it's not my choice. I didn't, but once I realized that, I returned to presence. That's something that I actually can do.
Stay with presence. That's what you can do. You can choose to go back into the thinking, or you can choose
right.
to stay with present.
But then I'll lose it again.
Yes.
And then, and even though my intention was to stay with it. So that's the choice part, and that's the interruption part. Is that what
yeah.
you're saying? That's kind of like, so if you took it on a bigger scale with the links of dependent origination and craving, say, and clinging, it's when there is a place there where we can choose to return to presence and let go of the habit.
It's more like you choose to stay with presence. So, so a way to think about it is every time you practice mindfulness, you're training the mind to be in mindfulness, and it is learning mindfulness. And it will start, it's like you're cultivating a new dependent origination is what you're cultivating.
Ah.
A different flow for what happens. It's not just going to be based out of ignorance. It's mm-hmm. going to be based out of awareness. So when you're, the normal habit is the mind is just running off of ignorance. It does whatever that impulsive, hardwired, grasping energy does. But when we practice, we disrupt that.
Mm-hmm.
And we send the mind in a different direction. Stay present here. It doesn't stay present, but it eventually it begins to learn how to stay present.
Yeah.
It's what I used to tell Philip, that I'm beginning to understand that when I practice mindfulness, I'm really teaching the mind how to come back to the present moment when I'm not there.
Yeah.
That's really what you're doing. You're teaching the mind how to come back when I'm not present. And when it does come back, then I try to get interested in staying here. So it's what you're doing is creating in the mind more interest in the present moment than the interest in the stories that it has running. The way this affects cessation is that if you think that you are doing this, that I'm doing all this, then you also think that I'm the one that's getting distracted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this kind of identification that we're doing the opposite of what we want. And every time we get distracted and we think that's me, then we're telling the mind, oh, look at what I'm doing. I'm interested in that. So remind me often to do that. And so I keep getting, I'm like telling the mind, I want to be distracted.
And that's reinforcing the self and the
that's
split.
Right.
Okay, that really is helpful. Thank you.
So when you let go of, when you realize this is not me any way, shape, or form, except if there is a you, it's only in the present moment when you set an intention to stay. And then you go back into ignorance, and then all of a sudden it comes back and you set an intention to stay. That ultimately becomes this fuel, and you start operating more out of awareness. And when you start operating more out of awareness, you're more trusting and more easy with whatever's happening. You're less caught in whatever's happening. Less identified is probably a better way to say it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, Deborah?
So this helps us kick ourselves less.
Yes. Kick ourselves less. And the more we kick ourselves, the more we're basically telling the mind, I don't like this. It's really a big deal. So remind me often. You don't want to do that. You want to treat it like it's not you. It's just a thing. And what can I, it's like so beautiful the way Beth was describing it. Like, what can I learn from this? What can I see? What can I feel into it? And then gradually the mind begins to understand. That's why most of us, if someone were to come and say, well, how is it that this mindfulness works? And you're like, I really don't know. I kind of had a I kind of practiced. I sat down. I spent most of the time thinking. But every once in a while, I come back to the breath. And now I feel more still now, more often. I don't know how that happened. I just know that happened. It's because the mind is learning through the same process of dependent origination, except it's the process by which Tim is going to talk about in December. It's the transcendental. It's this faith-based process that does the same thing out of awareness rather than out of ignorance. But I think the main thing to begin to notice is when we feel ourselves caught up in something, somehow to tell ourselves, this is not me. This is the mind trying to follow a delusion. And that delusion is coming up against reality. And that's where suffering is. That's where the mental torment comes. It's like Rodney used to always say that suffering is reality minus grief. So the less grief we have, the less resistance we have to reality, the less suffering we have. Even if reality is difficult or painful, it means that we're something we need to do in relationship or respond in reality. That's what compassion is. It is knowing of reality, knowing of suffering, and having the impulse or desire to respond to alleviate it. That is reality. But whatever thing we want to do may or may not alleviate the suffering. We get stuck in thinking, whatever I come up with, that should alleviate the suffering. And it doesn't. And then we get stuck in this continued distortion or delusion. The reason why I think this is important is because, yeah, the likelihood of things getting easier before they get the likelihood of things getting worse before they get easier is much more true. And so if we're going to keep a steady mind and body, we got to work with this energy now. We got to work with where do I get caught in delusion and stuck, and see it as delusion and not as something's wrong with me or something's wrong with them, or this shouldn't be this way. This is the way it is. And so we're practicing to try to learn how to be with the world the way it is and respond to it with loving kindness, which is not easy.
One side effect of this for me after all this practice is that I don't feel shame the way I used to feel shame, and this is sort of recent. I feel like I really get it now that, you know, that that's a delusion as well. It's my own, you know, trying to like fix whatever I think is wrong. Blame myself, blame somebody else. I mean, you know, something's got to be fixed about this, but really it is just conditioning. It's ignorance and conditioning over and over. It's a habit.
Exactly. That's right.
I totally get it now. So.
And so when you get it and you interrupt it, you can actually make a difference in that mental torment around shame, mm-hmm. in a way that you can't make a difference when we keep trying to fix this wrong. It doesn't really work because it keeps coming back and keeps coming back.
That's true.
Yeah, Kathy.
I was going a similar direction actually, but I got caught with the nothing is wrong with me, and realizing what a profound thing that's been, what a great insight that's been. For me, because particularly I have a lot of physical aches and pains. Well, who doesn't? But, you know, my tendency in the past has always been to blame myself. This hurts because I did that.
Yep.
And that is, I finally understand.
That is not true.
Totally deluded.
Yes.
I'm off the hook in a way.
Yeah.
It's a different hook, but.
Yeah. But you can see just with these two habits. Two habits of mine, not just yours, but Beth's also. Just see those habits of mind and the cessation of suffering that Buddha was pointing to. That is the third noble truth. Not the end of pain, not the end of things needing to be fixed, not the end of wishing my son would finally get it together and don't have anything wrong happen. That's not the end of suffering. The end of suffering is that mental torment that we get stuck in, trying to keep reality from being the way it is. And in that stuckness of trying to keep reality from being the way it is, we end up suffering more and more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
But when we let go of that and begin to see how habitual this is, how automatic, programmed from when we were little, it started running and it's going to keep running forevermore until we interrupt it. When we begin to see that, then we can change some of our, it loosens. It's actually what you guys are describing is non-self. But that word non-self gets so out there. So Cheryl, you always used "I can fix it" as your the selfing. I can fix it. I can fix it. I can fix it. And when we let go of that as an identification, then what actually happens is you don't have to fix it. There may not even need to be something fixed, just the way it is. Or Kathy, for you, it's not my fault. Beth, it's, you know, I gotta let him just be who he is. I gotta let it go. So these kinds of learnings, you can't learn intellectually. You have to learn it by feeling into it. And usually the feeling into it is what's painful. And that's what we're so afraid of. But actually, when you talk about it so openly like this, you can begin to see that being able to be up against that pain is where the ultimate relief comes from. That's why the Four Ennobling Truths start with their suffering. And it ends with there is a path that leads to the end of suffering. Yeah, Jean.
So I'm just thinking, how do we hold both the idea that, okay, this isn't me, these habits and these things I might want to complain about, this is not me, and at the same time recognize that we're responsible for the way we show up in the world, right?
Yeah.
It seems like there's a contradiction there.
It does seem like that, but it's not in the heart's understanding. Because in the heart's understanding, this is what Buddha was talking about. We move towards gratification. That's that habit energy. Our habit energy is convincing us that if I do this, I'm going to have some gratification here. Gratification meaning I'm going to get my way. They're going to stop. I'm going to get revenge. Something. I'm going to get some gratification. And what the Buddha was pointing to is don't try to move towards a gratification. See the danger in this moment in the habit energy. And the more we see the danger in the habit energy, not danger like I'm scared to death to move, but we see the harm that gets caused by our actions, that actually supports the mind in not wanting to do it. But mostly the mind doesn't see that harm. It sees the gratification and drags us along with it because it's convinced that we're going to get gratification on the end of it. So it's worth it. The ends justify the means. So let's just go. And when we start seeing the harm, then it actually is easier and easier and easier to interrupt this flow. But you have to see the danger. And that's what's difficult to see in dependent origination. By the time you get into clinging, we don't see that danger. We're like off and running into becoming. But here we are. It's when we are at that tension place that we can see the danger. And not danger like, ooh, we're going to die. But danger like, you know, this could create a rift in my relationship with this person, and I may not be able to heal it. This lie that I think might get me by just might set in motion some harm that I can't pull back. And so it's seeing the possibility of harm in our actions. And that's how you hold it together. So you're not, it's not you, but if you can see the danger, then you can interrupt that gratification. That's what addicts have to come to terms with in order to go into recovery. They have to see the danger of their addiction rather than flowing into the gratification. And when they can see the danger of taking that drink or, you know, taking the drugs or whatever that addiction is, when I saw the danger of my constantly just falling into depression without doing anything about it, then I begin to change it. But we have to see that danger with addiction. And when we do, then we can interrupt the gratification. So that's what you're doing. Can you see that? Trying to hold it. You're trying to hold it. It's not you, but this gratification you think you're going to get out of this isn't really going to be worth it in the long run.
When you say it's not you, you mean at it like at an ultimate level in terms of your, your Buddha nature or whatever?
I'm saying that you got to imagine, I look at my granddaughter, she's 3 years old. I don't know if I told you guys, but I always, my mama always raised me, you know, grandmas and mamas have the best sugars for boo-boos and owies. So if she falls down, I'll say, oh, let me kiss it. And now her mother has taught her, no, the pain will go away on its own. I don't need any sugar. I said, but grandma's sugar is pretty good. She's like, no, grandma, the pain will go away on its own. I don't need any sugar. Now, I know that that is wisdom, but I need to give some sugar out. And it's so difficult for me to handle it. But I could also see where I could create in my trying to be the sweet grandma, I could create this kind of victim energy that every time she falls down, she got to get somebody to help her. And I could see what her mother is trying to do. But my point that I'm making is, what is being set in that child's mind isn't coming from her. It's coming from her mom or me. And she will live with it for the rest of her days. Now, either one of us could be right or wrong. We don't know. We're doing what we think is the best way to do it. And some parents, they're not even there. They're so worried about something else. They're not even helping. I mean, you know, we have all kinds of drama as parents. But all of that drama gets dumped on children. And then children at 3 years old, I've watched her really be hurt. And she's trying to negotiate. She thinks, maybe I should go get that grandma sugar because this, I think that would help. I don't know if I trust that the pain's going to go away. So I watch her negotiate on what to do. That when you're 3 years old and you get stuck with some complicated situation here between who's right, grandma or mama, three-year-olds use their three-year-old mind and decide wisdom. And what wisdom is. So you got to get this. A lot of what we do as adults is based on decisions we made when we were five. And we keep making them. The same, it's set in motion a flow and we keep living out of that flow. The older we get, the less we question the validity of this flow. So when you come into the practice and you start seeing the danger of some of these habit behaviors, you start questioning the necessity of doing this flow. And then you can begin to get some ease and respect. But mostly, we live out of our habits and we never question it. And dependent origination, the practice of it, is beginning to question this automatic way that we live and begin to poke at and question whether it's really, is this really the way I want to live? Or is there, you know, even in my sense of righteousness, is this really the way I want to live? I have a lot of friends that are righteous. But even in their righteousness, they seem pretty much pissed off all the time. And I'm always like, is this the way you want to live? If all that righteousness is going to cause all that, maybe you should do a little wrongfulness a little bit and see what that's like, you know, play a little bit. Maybe that'll help out some. But this is what the Buddha was pointing to, is that somehow or another, we have to see this wheel and disrupt these patterns that we just take for granted because we started them when we were very, very young and we have never questioned them. We got them handed down from our parents and we've never questioned it. Unless it's something so bad that you have to go to therapy or you get stuck in drug and alcohol or something like that. or you're, you know, overwhelmed with something, you know, you commit some criminal act and then you look, you know, end up in jail and you got to try to work it through. But most of us just live our lives with these same habitual patterns because they don't cause any habit, they don't cause any problems, so I'm good. And dependent origination is poking at that, saying, don't do that. There is danger there. You may very well be causing harm with that thing that you do that you don't think is that big of a deal. You know, it's just the way I am. And learning to see the danger rather than just, you know, go with the gratification. That's what we're doing here. Yeah, Deborah?
Yeah, a little bit. I've been mulling over this kind of practical thing. And it was just something I read before this evening about changing habits, becoming aware of habits and changing habits on a mass scale. And the issue was, how do we change, as a society, changing the habit of getting too close and not covering our faces? And it was all this, you know, how do we get, how do public health oriented people help folks change their habits? And it was really about changing habits. So the take home I think that I'm hearing is being aware that the behavior is habit.
Yeah.
And are we trying to not eliminate, try to move away from habit or to adopt wiser habits?
You're seeing the danger. I have a friend who does not believe in masks for COVID. He thinks the whole thing is a big joke. And he goes to church. And, you know, he always has gone to church. You don't have no problems. And then he called and said his friend got COVID. And he was sitting right next to him in church. And he's all worried. What do you think that means? And I said, I don't know. You got to go get tested. I don't know. You just got to go get tested, but you should be quarantining. And then he begins to see this understanding. Sometimes we don't. This is what I think the Buddha was pointing to. Unless we see the danger, we'll go for the gratification. And so sometimes right now we just happen to be competing with a mindset that doesn't see the danger. But it doesn't mean that danger isn't showing up all over the place. And more and more and more people are seeing the danger. But it's just a very slow seeing. I don't know if you can create a much faster or more noticeable way of seeing it. So until that happens, we all have to just follow the procedures the best we can. And I did not say I told you so to my friend. I felt sorry for him because he was very sad. And I'm not going to lie and say I didn't think it, but I thought it. But I'm not going to say that. I realized I've had my own moments when I had to come to terms with something I thought I knew the true way, and I was flat wrong. And so I just had compassion for that felt sense of beginning to see when we're wrong, seeing the danger. So I think that's it. When we start moving towards this notion that we can set the tone for everybody, it doesn't work like that. It breaks down. The only thing we can do is set the tone for ourselves and maybe the people we care about around us. Make an agreement on how we're going to be. I got to share one more thing. I feel a heaviness around this dependent origination. And I know there's a heaviness to it because we're talking about samsara. But the point of dependent origination is not to go into the difficulty and stay there. The point of practicing with dependent origination is to actually begin to feel and see the possibility of freedom. And when you start actually seeing the possibility of freedom, it is amazing how joyful that is. I have way more freedom today than I ever had in my entire life. And I am certain, I am definitely happier than I ever was in my entire life. And that comes from practicing with the difficulty, but acknowledging it's not me. So it's almost like I gotta be like Vimala and my hot dog. I gotta tell you, we could have a great time going up the hill, talking about what it feels like to be disappointed. Or we can trudge up the hill feeling disappointed and not really enjoying the time we have together. So that's what I think we got to find a way to start having some joy around this, some laughter around this, so that we're not thinking we're not in therapy. You're not trying to heal yourself. You're trying to see the truth of the way we live. And that, you know, I got the trick for you. You can do this for next week and then we'll see if somebody next week shares it. Whenever you feel tension, I want you to ask yourself quietly, how old am I? How old am I right now? When you start noticing that you're 5, maybe 9, there might be some 13-year-olds in there. You can laugh at yourself because you're being a little embarrassed. But a lot of the times when you are in a lot of tension, you are a kid. Somatically in your body, you're going to feel like a kid. And that's because you're operating out of a child's rule. But you won't necessarily know it until you start feeling into the body how old I am. How old am I when you feel irritated or frustrated? When you look at the news and you get mad, just take a moment. How old am I? How old do I feel right now? And sense into that. Not guessing, sensing. I think you're going to be surprised at how old you are. But that'll help you see how how much it's not you, adult you. It's the kid in you that's setting the tone for a lot of who we think we are. Okay, I think that's good for today. I want to give you one announcement. I don't even know if we had an announcement. Do we have an announcement? Was somebody supposed to do announcements? Great. Good. I didn't miss anything. So we'll do announcements next week. I think really it's only one. It's Carol Wilson will be here on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. But there is something special that's coming out, and it's part of why I'm beat tired. So I was asked by 10% Happier to do, they're doing this podcast for the elections. It's actually coming out today, and it's the Brahma Viharas. So this week is Metta. Next week is Compassion. Metta is Joanna Hardy. I'm in here with the big girls, I'm telling you. Joanna Hardy is doing Metta this week. Reverend Angel is doing compassion next week, and yours truly on the third week will be doing mudita, which I'm so happy about. And then Roshi Joan Fairfax is doing equanimity. And then they're going to have this little challenge about a meditation practice so we can get through the election with the Brahma Viharas rather than a lot of that stress that's going to start coming our way pretty quick if it's not already here. So I asked for a special link for Sims. I was hoping it would be here already, but it doesn't come until Wednesday. So on Wednesday, Samuel's going to send it to me, and then we're going to send it out in a mass email. So make sure you're on that mass email. You get that mass email, and then we can do it together. We can kind of go through it as a sangha and steady ourselves through these difficult times. I just think it's fabulous what they've done. I've read some of, I listened to Joanna and Reverend Angel. You are going to love it. I don't know what mine sounds like, but I'm hoping I raised the bar on mudita just like they did. So it's, I'm so overwhelmed with it. And so I had to do the taping for the podcast at 6 a.m. That's why I'm dead tired. So I did that, a retreat, and yeah, but coming just wasn't flowing today. But this was good. I appreciate it. And we'll do becoming next week. All right. All right. So let's just sit a little bit and we'll send some metta, send some merit out. So whatever good energies arise out of our practice, whatever is beneficial, supportive, inspiring, whatever is kind and caring, may it rise up and go out into the entire world, fall lightly on all beings everywhere without exception. And may it show us suffering and the end of suffering. All right, good peoples. Thank you so much. I'm so happy. I'm so relieved.